Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Lydia Johnson. Our guest this week is Illinois Democrat Representative Eric Sorensen, who joins us to discuss rural voter perspective and what a Harris presidency could mean for agriculture. But first, here's this week's headlines. Farmers, retailers, and lenders are urging lawmakers to pass a new farm bill by the end of this year. Speakers testified in front of the House Ag Committee this week, saying the bill would help offset the impact of falling crop prices, as well as high production costs and interest rates next year. Farmers also say they are falling deeper in debt as production costs remain high during a period of low commodity prices. Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson is open to having a pre-conference negotiation with the Senate Ag Committee. However, Senate Ag Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow still has not released the text of her farm bill draft. A recent report by the United Nations agencies says nearly one out of every 11 people globally faced hunger last year. The UN wants to reach its zero hunger goal by 2030. According to the report, about 733 million people faced hunger in 2023. If the trend continues, an estimated 582 million people will still be undernourished in 2030. UN representatives are asking for a transformation in agri-food systems that ensures people have access to affordable, healthy diets, and for investments in rural agriculture to better address hunger. Vice President Kamala Harris is hitting the campaign trail as a new Democratic presidential nominee. Harris has been facing agricultural issues since she became Attorney General in California in 2011. She successfully defended animal welfare laws during her tenure, but ag groups note their concerns about her record increasing farm worker protections and promoting sweeping climate change proposals. Harris was one of 14 Democratic co-sponsors of a Green New Deal resolution in 2019 that laid out a sweeping plan for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. During her short campaign for president in 2019, Harris expressed support for educating the public about the impact of food choices on climate change. Congressman Eric Sorensen sits on the House Ag Committee. We began our conversation discussing his perspective on Biden's choice not to run for re-election.
I think Joe Biden is a good man. I mean, he served our country admirably for the better part of 50 years. You know, I was one of I was the 17th House Democrat to say that he should step aside because we do need new leadership. I was listening to my my folks back home, my constituents, you know, and they want somebody that is going to have this good vision for what is ahead. And so I'm excited for what we have going forward today.
And what should agriculture in particular expect from a Harris presidency, and how could that differ from a Biden presidency?
Look, you know, I think one of the things that we've got to look forward to going forward is the increasing uncertainty in the markets. You know, I hear that from our producers back home, that we need to make sure that we're doing what's right to solidify the export markets, to decrease the amount of time it takes for us to export. But then also a lot of folks back home and in the agriculture sector are worried about what happens on the world stage. You know, back home in Illinois, I mean, Illinois is one of the leaders in producing corn and soy. You know, we do it so well in this part of the world because this is some of the most fertile land in the world between Chicago and Des Moines, Iowa. This is the place not only to where we have fertile soil, but as the only meteorologist in Congress, understanding that this is the place where we have the even amount of seasons to help keep that fertility in the soil. And so as we are really good in growing, we also have to make sure that there's a market there for selling.
Analysts have said that rural voters in swing states this year are particularly focused on more national issues. So in your opinion, what do you think are some of the biggest issues for rural voters and particularly your voters in Illinois' 17th district?
Yeah, I actually spend more time in small towns, you know, where the population sign is 1,000. I spend more time there than I do in the big cities like Rockford and Peoria. And I think we have to have a focus on our small communities because, you know, not only are our farm families, you know, in my district and around the Midwest so important, and we have to make sure that these communities are too. So it's making sure, what are we doing to make sure that it isn't just a grain elevator that is supplying jobs in our small towns? You know, how are we making sure that, you know, the small town medical clinic works? How are we making sure that the small town machine shop works? How are we making sure that there are teachers for the schools? Those are the things that we've got to focus on in middle America, as opposed to some that only just want to argue, you know, whatever the social issue is of the day. I'm not about that. I'm just about finding the solutions for small town middle America.
And Aggies and farmers have repeatedly told us that getting a farm bill is a big priority. And you were one of four Democrats to vote in favor of the House Farm Bill. What ultimately swung you to vote in favor of it?
Yeah, since I came to Congress, you know, I made sure that I was listening to the folks back home. You know, I don't have a background in politics, you know, being the meteorologist, right? And so I will be honest with you, I'm not comfortable listening to the people here in Washington to guide me. I have to listen to the people back home. And so one of the things that they were telling me is we have to make sure that we're bolstering crop insurance. Crop insurance is so important. As I know, we're getting more times of extreme weather, but then we're getting more times of drought in between. And so it is harder today in many instances to make it go. So making sure that crop insurance is stable is important, you know, and then going back to the farm families and Farm Bureau and saying, hey, now that we have text, what do you think of this? Is this good enough for you? And then when they said, yes, it is good enough for us, it's not perfect. We want to make sure that we continue to move it forward. Okay. And then I was a yes vote because my constituents told me to be a yes vote. Nobody else did. And looking back on it, it was the right decision because I had earned the trust of the people for 20 years, being their weatherman, right? If I would have heard from them, yes, it's good enough, Congressman, and then I voted no, then I wouldn't be listening to them. I wouldn't be putting them first. And then also then I would lose the trust of the people in that very first committee markup vote.
We'll be right back with more from Congressman Eric Sorensen right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Spring floods, fall floods, there's extreme fires, extreme drought.
Our farm is more resilient through the use of cover crops. We have better drought stress tolerance.
When it all boils down to it, these USDA climate programs are good for Main Street America. All that increase, it's going back into the economy.
If you're smart farming, you're also climate smart farming.
Welcome back. Before being elected to Congress, Representative Sorensen was a meteorologist. He says there is room for improvement in developing climate resilient policies in the Farm Bill.
You know, I think that there's always improvement to be made. And quite simply, when I talk about how the environment is changing, I'm a firm believer as the only meteorologist in Congress. We don't have a silver bullet to solve the problem, okay? But we have silver buckshot. Now, what does that mean? It means that we have to go and analyze what's going on a yearly basis to make sure we can understand what will work in agriculture today. But then we have to go back tomorrow and look at it again to see if there's something that we missed, right? And so I think that that is the type of approach that we need. And we need to make sure that this smart ag moving forward is something that it isn't pushed on everyone. You know, I don't believe in that either. But I do believe that we need to have the incentives. We need to have the rebates there for people who want to make those decisions that will not only positively affect their farming operation, but it also positively affect their kids and their grandkids.
Are you worried that improvements to the commodity title and crop insurance could be lost if Democratic leadership takes over the House next year?
No, I mean, those are things that I'm going to fight for, right? You know, and I said that to Chairman G.T. Thompson. He called me up after my farm bill vote. And he said, you know what, Congressman? He goes, I thought it was a mistake at first. He goes, how did the meteorologists vote for this? And I told him, I said, I listened to my constituents. But then also they told me it was a good bill, but it's not a great bill. And I said, Chairman, I want to work with you to make sure that we get the things in here that we need, that we're able to now work with Senator Stabenow. We need to see the text from the Senate bill so that we can work on these things together. But then I told the chairman, I said, look, I said, we work together, and then it will be my job to be able to go to my Democratic colleagues to say, this is a good bill. Because we all, in the end, have to feel good about this farm bill. You know, I've talked with a lot of members of Congress that go back many, many years. And everybody who has worked to pass a farm bill has said, when we got it to the end, when we were able to vote on it, it was good. It made us feel good, right? We need to get to that today because right now we're not there.
Well, Representative Sorensen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Always great to be with you.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion. But first, our Jake Sikowski has more on the open Senate seats and the 2024 election in this week's Map It Out.
Since Joe Biden's decision to end his reelection effort, new uncertainty exists in swing state Senate races. 34 Senate seats are on the ballot this November's general election, and this map shows states where Senate elections are happening and the party of the last incumbent. Of these races, 10 seats are held by Republicans, 20 by Democrats, and 4 by Independents. Democrats currently hold a 51-49 majority in the Senate, which includes 4 Independents who caucus with Democrats. However, Democrats will have the largest number of seats to defend in the upcoming November general election. Current analysis by the Cook Report indicates a handful of toss-up races, including seats currently held by Sherrod Brown of Ohio, John Tester of Montana, Jackie Rosen of Nevada, and the Michigan seat being vacated by the retiring Senate Agriculture Committee Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow. For AgriPulse, I'm Jacob Zukowski.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. This week's panel is going to focus on the upcoming election and the possible changes ahead for agriculture. We're joined this week by Ethan Lane with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and Mike Strands with the National Farmers Union. Mike, we'll start with you first. Over the weekend, Joe Biden chose not to run for re-election and endorsed Kamala Harris. What would a Harris presidency mean for agriculture?
I think we can look at what the Biden administration has accomplished as a good blueprint for what direction a Harris administration would be headed towards. We saw a lot of work from the Biden administration on ensuring a more competitive economy for agriculture. That's meant greater investment in marketing opportunities. We've also seen really good investment in agriculture through the Biden administration, through just look at the budgets that President Biden has put forward over the last several years. We haven't seen cuts to crop insurance as we've seen in previous budgets from other administrations. I would expect that trend to continue in a Harris administration as well. And we've also seen the great emphasis on helping farmers and encouraging farmers and boosting farmers' work to be the best stewards of the environment, particularly when it comes to climate change. So I think we can look to that for a Harris administration if that were to come to pass.
And Ethan, turning to you, during Harris's term as California Attorney General, she successfully defended two animal welfare laws. From your perspective, Ethan, what would a Harris presidency do for animal agriculture?
Well, certainly there are some concerns there from true animal ag producers around the country who are experiencing an onslaught of attacks from the animal rights community. You know, looking at someone like Kamala Harris, who has a record of being sympathetic to kind of that agenda and the impact it has on the small family farmers that the Biden administration keeps gaslighting us into believing they're trying to protect. You know, they use words like competition while shutting down competition in the marketplace. They cater to some of these animal rights funded groups. It's disappointing, and we're hopeful that a Harris presidency would lead to a little bit of a reevaluation of the failure of the Biden competition agenda and some of the animal rights leaning initiatives that they have entertained over the last couple of years. But it's so early in the process, and her involvement in agriculture during this administration thus far has been so limited, we don't really know what that might look like. You know, we can kind of speculate at this point about, you know, departures. You know, you have Secretary Vilsack, who's been at the helm for quite a long time, and whether or not he would choose to depart at this point, what that means for succession, how much of the Biden team would stay in place versus kind of a whole cloth transition in a new Harris administration. We're at a point right now where we really can only sort of speculate on what that might look like. Leaves a lot of unanswered questions.
When we were at the Republican National Convention last week, farmers and livestock producers told us that they look forward to reduced regulations from a Trump-Vance presidency. And during his presidential nomination speech, Donald Trump even pledged to kill what he called the Green New Scam. But when we look at Harris's record, she co-sponsored the Green New Deal in the Senate. So what differences could there be between the two tickets' climate policies if elected?
Well, you know, the U.S. cattle industry is the most sustainable on planet Earth. We have the highest quality beef the world's ever seen with the lowest environmental footprint. We're demonstrably more sustainable than our competition around the world. So working with an administration that understands that and wants to encourage our producers to continue doing the good work they're already doing would be welcome. And I think we've seen flashes of that from the Biden administration. We saw that during the Trump administration as well. So I think that's an environment that cattle producers can feel fairly comfortable wading into. You know, where we'll see the distinctions is in other areas. You know, this administration has been unremarkable at best on trade, but clearly I think for all of us in the ag economy, some real concerns from some of the rhetoric we've seen from the Trump Vance side of the aisle as far as sort of their lack of enthusiasm for international trade, especially for exports out of the ag sector. So, you know, I mean, pluses and minuses to both, and that's something I think we're all going to have to weigh moving into the fall and figure out where, as an ag economy, we need to educate whoever comes in the new administration as to what farmers and ranchers in the U.S. really need to be competitive and stay successful.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Spring floods, fall floods, there's extreme fires, extreme drought.
Our farm is more resilient through the use of cover crops. We have better drought stress tolerance.
When it all boils down to it, these USDA climate programs are good for Main Street America. All that increase, it's going back into the economy.
If you're smart farming, you're also climate smart farming.
Welcome back. There are a handful of toss-up districts in the upcoming election. Mike Strands with the National Farmers Union says the Farm Bill and the need for competition are some of the most important issues for farmers and rural voters.
There's a lot of emphasis, of course, on what's going on right now in the Farm Bill. And we've heard a lot of discussion from the agriculture committees on the work that's been done on the House side and the work that's still going on the Senate side to get some sort of bipartisan passable Farm Bill through. Another topic that has come up time and again from family farmers and ranchers has been the need for competition and how the Biden administration has made big steps forward towards enforcing the Packers and Stockyards Act. This is, of course, coming from family farmers and ranchers themselves. And then, of course, on climate initiatives, we've been seeing the ways that those investments in building a stronger response to climate change through agriculture, through incentives, through the different nations and farm groups that are part of efforts to do just that. We're starting to see the fruits of that through a lot of the investments through the Inflation Reduction Act and climate initiatives there. So those are some of the big things that have come up amongst farmers and ranchers across the country that I've seen. And I think that sort of interest will continue through November.
One thing that has attracted a lot of attention from the media and from the public is Project 2025, released by conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation. It proposes massive cuts to crop insurance and nutrition programs. Mike, do you believe that any of these proposals are likely to really go into effect with a Trump-Vance presidency?
Well, we've seen this sort of proposal from the Heritage Foundation, a pretty major think tank in Washington. And we've seen these sorts of proposals in budgets from President Trump before as well, things that would cut the farm safety net, that would reduce crop insurance protections, would really undermine a lot of the farm safety net as it stands. Does it have a chance of passing? Well, it's certainly not part of the farm bill debate right now. And there's other provisions in that proposal and Project 2025 that would also make some other changes for, particularly to checkoffs and things like that. So I think there's a lot to watch, a lot of proposals out there that might not pass up or down right away or will be introduced as legislation. But those ideas are out there, and it's something that agriculture needs to be mindful of.
And Ethan, how about you? From your perspective, what components of Project 2025 could we see from a Trump-Vance presidency?
Yeah, you know, look, the Heritage Foundation is no friend to American agriculture. They never have been. They hate the commodity checkoff programs. They tend to always be on the other side of farmers and ranchers. I think President Trump was very wise to distance himself from the 2025 project. There are other initiatives through the America First Policy Institute that I think are probably more rooted in reality and grounded in the voices of my producers around the country and others, and reflect those real needs of farmers and ranchers. And, you know, President Trump in his past term in office showed that was a real focus for him and something that he put a lot of emphasis on, truly listening to producers on the ground. So I don't anticipate that Project 2025 having any real seat at the table in a new presidency. To Mike's point, I think it would be kind of a difficult lift on the Hill as well, as far as any real support for it beyond the headlines.
Wonderful. Well, Ethan and Mike, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Lydia.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers after this. But first, our Jake Sikowski has more on U.S. farm debt and asset growth in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Farm sector debt is increasing, but rising asset values are helping to keep farm operations financially stable, according to the Economic Research Service. Rising farmland and machinery prices are likely driving the growth in outstanding loans, in addition to farm size growth. This graph shows the growth of farm debt and assets from 2017 to 2024. Total farm debt is expected to reach over $547 billion this year, a 40% increase since 2017, and more than a 5% increase from last year. Experts say that low interest rates in 2020 and 2021 may have influenced farmers' decisions to take out loans in those years. The value of assets, including real estate and machinery, is predicted to be over $4 trillion in 2024, a 42% increase from 2017. Operations whose owners reported farming as their primary occupation hold 88% of total farm sector debt, despite only representing 48% of all farms. For AgriPulse, I'm Jacob Zukowski.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. Next week is the final week that both chambers of Congress will be in session before the August recess. USDA's monthly agricultural prices report comes out on Wednesday. And the department will also release its yearly report on agricultural land values on Friday. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more at agripulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is agripulse.com.